Episode 2105, My Strength is My Story with Jamie Grace, Finding Quiet.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at
a stop sign. Happy every day. It is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series. And we have with us in the house, singer-songwriter Jamie Grace. I'm telling you, it is going to be music to your ears in so many ways. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends, family, and fans of Jamie's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy, Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, this episode is brought to you by the AIM Academy. Oh, I just have to tell you that your heart is in for a ride of a lifetime. Jamie is so authentic and real. You would have thought as we talked and just chatted as if we had been girlfriends for years. We talked about those heart issues that you go to that one person that's like, you know what? I want to open up to you because I feel safe with you. And I know a lot of us are so busy, there's so much noise, and finding quiet is just so difficult now. She asked a question, and I thought it was very interesting. When was the last time I heard absolute silence for 10 minutes? And as you listen to Jamie, think about your answer to that question, because I promise you, you will gain greater insight in finding quiet. Without further ado, let's welcome in Jamie Grace. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I am so excited. We have a musician, a songwriter, a singer in our presence. That means I cannot sing for you today, even though my voice is okay, but nothing like hers. Jamie Grace is in the house. She is a wife of 2.5 years to Aaron, her handsome man, and mom to their little girl, Isabella. She is a 2-time Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, and actress. Jamie actively advocates for joy, wellness, and mental health through the lens of music, film, and faith. As an entertainer at heart, you will find new music and weekly videos on her YouTube channel. Plus, you can listen to her on the Jamie Grace podcast. Today, Jamie shares her heart even more with her brand new book, Finding Quiet, My Journey to Peace in an Anxious World. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Oh my gosh. And, you know, we were just chatting before all of this, and I brought out an old poster from years and years ago when you began singing with I Shine. Oh my goodness. I mean, you were just a little thing.
I know. I was 17 years old. That was 11 years ago.
Oh my goodness gracious. Hopefully you have some fond memories of that time in your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I Shine was the start of my career, and it was some of the greatest times. I have so many great memories from I Shine, so I love when people bring it up.
Well, I can't believe that my daughter still has it. I actually was able to speak with Robert Beeson, who started and was the founder of I Shine. And so I brought it out of there. She's like, Mom, you know, I have that poster. And I'm like, seriously? And we have, you know, we even bought, you know, CDs and all of that, signatures on it. But we just pulled the poster out because we thought, oh my gosh. And so to bring this full circle, it just makes me as an older woman now, because I saw you as a mom who had, let's see, that would have been my oldest daughter would have been in middle school and my youngest would have been in elementary school. And so obviously now I've matured, but to see you grow is absolutely beautiful. And I love, love, love your book. You spill your heart out. You're so vulnerable. And I can't wait to dive in. Well, before we begin, I've got to ask you, what brings you joy?
Oh, man. I mean, to be very dignified and, you know, I should start with my family. The second you said that, I did start thinking about food. So just like that was the first thing that came to mind. It's just like really good food, but also just time with my family. Like, it just makes me so happy. Like it's really cool when you're with, you know, the people that you love, you can have fun even doing, you know, the most mundane or monotonous things. You know, our daughter, she stays with my parents on Thursday nights for her little sleepover. And so we have our date night, my husband and I, and I have a job coming up, work-wise, and we're still trying to navigate what, you know, filming and everything looks like in the time of COVID. And so I had to get a COVID test. And so, you know, here my husband and I are on our date night, you know, sitting in a parking lot, getting our noses swabbed and everything. And he decided to do it just to be nice. And so I didn't have to do it by myself. And so we were like, well, what a date night. And like, we're just having fun, you know, with the nurse that was there. Like, we're just having us a good old time. And I'm like, this is joy. Like, when it's the people you love, you can have fun even making your husband, or, you know, maybe suggesting he get one in solidarity with you. So it's just being with the people I love brings me a lot of joy.
I love that, because it's, you know, we have to sometimes search for that joy, and we can find it in the smallest of places, even when it's so dark. Jamie, what was it like for little Jamie Grace growing up?
Yeah. It was great. You know, there was of course some unfortunate things in my life, just as any child, you know, experiences, or any human experiences. But my mom and dad, they're awesome humans. You know, I even, when people do hear me speak and or sing even, and they hear about the joy that I sing about or speak about, even in the midst of adversity, it always causes me to make sure that I'm intentional about acknowledging the privilege that I have, in that I was raised in a God-fearing household, and I was raised with parents that were very sensitive to my emotional needs, and that were very loving and caring, you know? And so, yeah, I grew up with a lot of privilege in that way. Like, my dad's a pastor, but I never felt like I was secondary to the church, you know? I always knew that family came before the church, and I know that that's not the case for a lot of families in ministry. Sometimes it's not even intentional, but yeah, my dad was an incredible husband and father and pastor. He's also an electrician by trade, so he woke up crazy early to go to work and came home late at night, and then spent the weekends preparing for sermons. My mom led worship at our church as much as she could. She became ordained as a pastor when I was in middle school, so she preached occasionally. And she also was our homeschool teacher, so she taught my sister and I. And she also had a booth at our local community, like, antique mall. And she also, like, did the hair of all the girls in the community. And, like, my mom is just the all of the above mom. They just did everything for everyone, of course, including their kids, to make sure that people felt loved and appreciated. I grew up loving music and musicals. I liked Annie. I liked eating cheese. I liked my sister. I liked playing the drums. I just had a really great, really great upbringing down in Georgia, just east of Stone Mountain, Georgia, if anybody is familiar with the South. So I really enjoyed my childhood. When I was 9 is when my health kind of took a turn. I'd always had health issues. I had asthma, I had pneumonia. So I'd always had issues with my health. But when I was 9 is when we kind of entered into, like, uncharted territory, where my parents weren't as familiar with what was going on, and that was when my tics started. And so at the age of 11 is when I got the formal diagnosis of Tourette syndrome, OCD, ADHD, and anxiety, which the primary being Tourette syndrome, which is uncontrollable movements and sounds called tics. So in the midst of a very joyful, loving, phenomenal home, if you will, from ages 9 to 15, I dealt with the severity of a tic disorder, where I couldn't always walk from point A to point B without ticking so much I would fall over, or ticking pillows in the car because I would, you know, I had like a head jolting tick, so I would hit my head on the window and things like that. So it was this, like, day and night shift from this, like, joyful family that, like, again, like, far from perfect, like, my parents didn't really get like paid for having the church. Like, so like, that's why they worked a million other jobs. And like, my mom was like also very committed to homeschooling. So like, we definitely struggled, but they were so hardworking and so in love with the Lord that there was such a good balance. And then ages like 9 to 15, it was just like this all of a sudden shift where a lot in my life just kind of shut down. So.
Well, I can only imagine what it was like, especially as a child going through it, because you're experiencing something that, I mean, honestly, you're not familiar with. It doesn't make sense to you. During that time, though, you also struggled with anxious thoughts. How did you handle that on top of everything else?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I didn't handle it. I started learning how to handle it when I got to college, because I started to realize there was really no other choice but to handle it. When I was growing up, I wouldn't have called them anxious thoughts. Like, I had them, but I really didn't know what they were. And also, because of the environment that I was in, it was almost like this, it was like my mom, without knowing, gave me very extensive therapy. Like, you know, and my parents had lots of experience as pastoral counselors, but it wasn't until I was like pretty deep into college that my parents even knew a lot about like clinical therapy, right? Like, they would, you know, they knew that people from the church like might go to it here and there, but like, that just wasn't a huge conversation in our church or in our community. We weren't against it, but it's just not a lot of Christians talk about licensed therapy.
That's right.
And so, but my mom, like, I feel like she did that for me without knowing. So like, she taught me coping mechanisms, but she would not use the phrase coping mechanisms. Like, for her, it was, well, this is what a mother does. And so, you know, when I was dealing with anxiousness, you know, she would do things like, okay, well, like, what we're going to do now, we're going to go create, we're going to go and write a song on the piano. And like, now my therapist would be like, yeah, like, let's find a place to center yourself and distract yourself and use words to validate. And my mom's like, let's go sing this worship song that might change, you know, change the topic in your mind, without knowing that she's literally doing what I now pay, like, you know, pay money weekly for. So I'm like, mom, can you just move in and tell me what to do? Thanks. But yeah, so that's definitely how I kind of coped with it as a kid, is just having a really healthy home that provided a safe place and provided an escape, and just provided a lot of attention. My parents, somehow, in the midst of everything they were doing, always found time to give me attention, and my sister as well. And my mom had a mantra where she would say, create something new every day. And so my sister, she's kind of like my claim to fame. She's the poet Morgan Harper Nichols, and she does like a lot of graphic design and stuff. You've maybe seen it on Instagram or Pinterest, and people ask her, they're like, how do you do this? How do you do this? And she's like, this is how I was raised. Like, we were told to create something new every day. And that became a coping mechanism for my anxiety. It wasn't until college that I started to realize that that's what that was, that it was a coping mechanism, and that when I was having anxious thoughts, I had to do something with them, you know, because when you're away from your parents, like, I wasn't just in college and away from my mom. I was in college and away from my mom, and then, oh, on a tour bus traveling the country, like, at the same exact time. And so I was having more anxious thoughts than ever, more triggers than ever, more pressure than ever, more stress than ever. You know, it's my first full-time job, and I'm in college at the same time. More everything than ever. And so I just started kind of like figuring out, okay, how am I going to deal with this anxiousness? And creating was such a huge way that I learned to cope with all of that.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And also, people need to understand that you weren't like 18 or 19 years old when you started college.
No.
You were 16.
mm-hmm.
You were a baby still. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and so
yeah.
Because you were homeschooled, you could set your own pace as to what you wanted to do and when you were going to do it and how you went. You write in your book, and I quote, "My anxiety tells me that silence and uncertainty mean I am not loved. It tells me that if I make a mistake, I should replay it until I make a new mistake that's worse. And then I will start replaying that one. That is something I think that hits home with a lot of people. We don't think about it that way, but when you wrote it and I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, that is what we do. We replace it. We, you know, put in the new 8-track or cassette or CD, or now, you know, we're just dialing it on digital. How do you take those thoughts and position them in another manner?
Right. When you said 8-track, I was like, I don't know that one as much. But when you said cassette, I was like, that's my era. but yeah, definitely, you know, this is going to sound like I'm joking, and I really hope that people can hear my sincerity in this, but I genuinely mean this. One of the harder things for me when quarantine began, and I know everybody has different, you know, thoughts about what quarantine is and stuff. Our family is a bit reserved about it, so we don't go out much and stuff like that. So, and we've got lots of colorful masks and little hook in the house where we hang them once they're clean. So we're you know, pretty quarantined family. But when it first started, one of the things that was hardest for me was, oh, this is going to be so embarrassing, was the shift in television and the interviews between the celebrity interviewer, whether it's Jimmy Kimmel or Oprah or Jimmy Fallon or whoever, the interviewer and the person they're interviewing, because I learned that they were not in the same studio together because it wasn't safe for them to be in the studio. So they're doing these Zoom calls. And what happens on a Zoom call is when they ask the question, there's that 4 to 7 second delay while you're waiting for the interviewee to then hear the question and answer it. So there's that quiet time in between the interviewer and the guest, and I couldn't handle it. And it was difficult for me because a huge part of my daily routine is listening to interviews. I've always been fascinated by them. It's probably a little bit of an OCD thing. I've always thought they were amazing. Ever since I was a little girl, I've been practicing interviews like my entire life. I would sit down and play, like when I was 9 or 10 years old, I would sit down and play like Oprah tapes and mute whoever was answering the questions, and I would answer the questions as if I was that person. I've always been like, I'm so fascinated by interviews. It's just, you know, one of those things when I'm not neurotypical, so I just make a lot of interesting choices. And so now being faced with these interviews in quarantine, when I'm the most stressed out I've ever been, because 2020 is a hot mess, and there's this silence. What am I supposed to do with this silence? I don't do well with silence. I don't do well with quiet time. I need it to be filled. I need something to happen. And then once there is quiet, that's when I start to doubt. That's when I'm like, oh, did they not have money to pay for better headphones? Is this a microphone problem? Why aren't they interviewing them? Why aren't they in the studio? They couldn't just sit 6 feet apart. They couldn't just wear a mask. Well, then we wouldn't be able to hear them. Then it would be muffled. Anytime I'm given quiet, I go on this downward spiral of negativity. And I do it in my personal life as well. When I lay down to go to sleep, I'm like, okay, well, let me put on some classical music, because God forbid I just go to sleep to the quiet. Because if I lay down to go to sleep at night and it's nothing but quiet, well, then all I can hear is, you were supposed to buy new milk for the baby and you totally forgot. Oh my goodness, you are a terrible mom. Now you're going to have to ask your husband to do it on the way home from work. And you know he's going to be tired and he might forget. And you're trying to be a good wife and let him just come straight home from work so he doesn't have to stop by the grocery store to do the stuff that you forgot. You must be a terrible wife. Wow. You've been married for 2.5 years and you're already messing this up. Like, I go in this downward spiral. Quiet has like always been a weakness for me. And that's a huge reason why the book is called Finding Quiet, is because it's the irony of calling myself out and being like, what if instead of this quiet time being used to doubt all people, all things, including yourself and your sanity, what if I give this quiet time to the Lord And what if I surrender this quiet time to what he says and what he thinks and what he needs and what he asks of me? What if that's what I use my quiet time for instead? And that's something that I have learned, that I have discovered, and that I've journeyed on and obviously written about, but that I'm also still discovering and figuring out, because, you know, I'm human and I'm destined to mess up a couple more times at least while I'm on this earth.
Maybe a couple.
Two to three.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this world is loud and noisy, as I know that you feel it. Of anybody, you feel it, because you are in the spotlight. There's lots of distractions, interruptions. When you talk about the noise of life and in life, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's just so easy to be overwhelmed by all the things that we just hear on a daily basis. I mean, I would just challenge anyone to think, like, when is the last time I heard absolute silence for 10 minutes? And not saying that we have to go pursue silence for 10 minutes, but I would be just curious for people to just, that was grammatically a hot mess. I would be just curious. Wow. My homeschool mom is just grieving right now in her home. I just feel like she heard that somehow from 20 minutes away. And she's like, I taught you better than that little girl. But yeah, like rhetorically, if we all just thought of that and wondered, when was the last time I heard silence for 10 minutes? You know, even in this interview, I have committed my time to this conversation and this interview, and I'm glad that I have. But as I'm doing it, like, I'm literally hearing the creak of my desk, and I'm like, oh my gosh, is this thing about to fall apart? Because we moved recently, and I'm like, did we lose a screw when we moved? Like, that's literally what's in my mind right now. And then my phone, I don't know if you heard it, my phone was just vibrating, which I put my phone on silent. But I'm like, wait, like, who's trying to reach me right now? I'm at work. This is important. Me and Christiana are trying to have a conversation. And it's the constant. It's like, again, if we go to bed at night and we just lay down and we turn off all the noise and we just silence everything, it might not even be quiet. We're still thinking of, maybe we hear a siren outside, and then we're wondering, okay, what does that mean? Is everybody okay? You know, is something wrong? Or, you know, again, our phone might go off in the middle of the night. We might get a text. Or when we wake up, most of us reach and grab for our phone, and we want to know, okay, who's doing what? What emails just came in? Even if we're reading the Bible on our phone, then it's like the notification of that. And if we miss that notification, then we're like, oh no, am I a good Christian because I missed my Bible study program on my phone? It's like, oh, but God doesn't judge me based on how much I read the Bible, but God does want me to read the Bible. There is so much noise. For those of us that are married, for those of us that have children, I have one child. So like, I cannot imagine. Now, I will tell you that 5 children, that's my goal. That's my minimum goal. So, you know, I'm working on it. Well, not presently working on it, TMI, but just letting you know. you know, that's the goal eventually. But like, even like when I try to like, just another TMI sentence, because here we go. Why not? You can just edit this out if it makes you uncomfortable. When I'm trying to potty, our one-year-old, she does this new thing where she doesn't just come in the bathroom. She grabs my ukulele and comes in the bathroom. And she says, mama, mama. And I'm like, little girl, I'm not Jamie Grace right now. I'm just mama. I don't sing for you when I'm on the toilet. I'm busy. So it's just impossible. It feels impossible to find quiet. It's not, but it can feel impossible sometimes.
Well, how do you find it?
Definitely not on the toilet. sorry, I'm not a very discreet person.
Oh no, no, I'm all there with you. That, you know, the kids need you only when you're on the toilet. Mom.
Only when I'm on the toilet. It's like I'll sometimes like find random times during the day where I'm like, oh, I don't have anything to do right now. And I'll just look at her like, hey, come talk to me. And then she's busy. I'm like, how do you have a schedule? You're one. Like, how does Brown Bear get attention right now when I would like your attention? Man, as far as finding quiet, it started with the smallest practice. And it started with intentionally taking 30 to 60 seconds of pursuing quiet. It seems minuscule. It seems like a short amount of time. But trust, when you set a timer on your phone for 30 seconds to do nothing, you will feel like you're sitting there for an hour and a half if you're anything like me. So that's when it started for me. It started with when I wake up in the morning, Don't reach for my phone. Don't reach for anything. Just embrace the quiet. Or when I'm going to bed at night, I go to bed to this one Bible app that it like reads the Bible while also like playing music and makes me so happy. But even with that, I start it before that. I'll do like 5 minutes of just like quiet time. Or maybe it is in the car for some people. Like maybe it is in the bathroom for some other people. Or when I'm cooking dinner, that's another time when I try to find quiet. When usually I want to catch up fast or something because my husband has the baby while I'm cooking. And so I'll be like, oh, I want to, you know, catch up on something that is like PG-13 that she can't listen to or like, you know, watch. Like there's this one marriage podcast. I'm like, she does not need to hear that stuff. But I'm like, you know what? Maybe I can cook in the quiet for a little while and just see what it's like. I remember when I was growing up, my mom would 9 times out of 10 not play anything in the car while we were driving. And she would just always encourage us to embrace the quiet. And she was just like, isn't it just so nice to just be in the quiet? Isn't it just so nice to just get to think about your day? And when I was little, I was like, no, it's not. Actually, I would love to be singing at the top of my lungs to Point of Grace right now. And I don't appreciate that you're keeping me away from a band that was obviously named after me. But my mom was very pro quiet. And now I'm realizing that even when I'm in the quiet and I have those anxious thoughts and I have those fears and those insecurities that just show up and just show out, I can choose to say, okay, you know what? I might be in a downward spiral of thinking negatively about myself right now. My anxiety might be screaming very loudly into the microphone as I'm trying to embrace this quiet. But I know for a fact that my God is bigger. And I know for a fact that I'm more valuable than what my anxiety says. And I'm worth more than what my fears are. I'm worth more than the insecurity of, am I a good mom? I know that I'm a good mom because my child is alive and well. And I know that I'm a good wife because my husband tells me. So, and also just because I know I'm a good wife, like even if he forgot to say it that day, I'm like, nah, bro, like I'm a good wife. Like he's a great husband too. I don't want to like dog him, but he's fantastic. But yeah, so it's like, you know, I know that I'm doing what I'm called to do because I'm waking up and saying, hey, God, how can I do what I'm called to do? And I'm pursuing what he shares with me. And even on the days when I absolutely mess up and I'm not pursuing what he shares with me, I know that I'm still loved and I know that I'm still his daughter. And that is always going to be the most valuable thing, is that the creator of the skies and seas and all things beautiful made me. And so whatever anxiety says in the quiet, whatever insecurities shout in the quiet, I know that truth will have the final word and that truth will say that I am a daughter of the Most High King. And that is what's most important.
Praise the Lord. Y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy of Finding Quiet, My Journey to Peace in an Anxious World. Well, figuring out life, as we can tell, is very, very crazy. And You're very open in your book, and you talk about a lot of life's struggles, from fixing things to letting go to control. I love the story you share about your dad in movie time. Share that story a little bit.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it happens all the time. My dad is the greatest fixer, and he's an electrician by trade, so anything that has any hint of a wire or a battery or anything electrical, if he can't fix it, he can fix it. Like if he sees that something's broken, he will sit there until he decides, no, it's fixed. Like it just is what it is. And so growing up, when we would have, you know, movie night here and there, my dad would sit there and just make sure the surround sound was perfect. And we had such a mosh-posh surround sound of, you know, random Goodwill speakers like that we found and things like that. And so he would sit there and rewire everything just so we could hear the perfect audio. And I'm talking about so we could hear the perfect audio for like Princess Diaries. I'm like, Dad, there are no explosions in this movie. Like there is nothing that we need surround sound for. And it's like, all we're going to hear is like, you know, Julie Andrews, like speaking from the back of the room, like that's okay. Like we can just hear her from the TV, Dad. But he was so serious about that. It just happened a couple weeks ago because Dancing with the Stars came on, and I'm not a good dancer, so I've not really been wildly invested in Dancing with the Stars before. Like, I just don't know a lot about dance. But TV came back, and I was like, damn, TV, which I didn't grow up on TV. So, like, you know how, like, when you go to college, like, some people like might go like crazy with like alcohol and partying and things like that. Mine was junk food and TV, like, because I didn't have it growing up. And so I was like Hot Pocket and Nickelodeon. Like, so I love TV now. So I want to watch Dancing with the Stars, but I'm too cheap to pay for cable. So me and my husband, we went over to my parents' house to watch Dancing with the Stars, and they don't have cable either. They have one of those like monthly subscription things, and he had to like rewire stuff. And then my husband's helping him mount a new TV. I'm like, why is there a new TV? Like, what is going on? But that's just how dads are. They just love fixing things.
They love fixing things. Well, and I know, you know, for that fixer out there, where do they begin to find quiet?
Mm-hmm. Man, oh man. I was actually, ironically, I was just talking about this with my dad the other day, and about how he and I both have boxes full of cables and wires, just in case they're ever needed.
Of course.
In the future. Because why not? You know, for the fixer, for the person that's like, look, man, I have to figure this out. I have to make this work. I have to make this happen. Something that's been helpful for me is just choosing to have those verbalized, like out loud, outspoken mantras that I say to myself. And then I just keep saying them until I believe them. And so one of them, like I was saying earlier, is saying, you know, like, the truth is that I am a daughter of the Most High King. There's something about writing that down that's like, yeah, that's cool. And there's something about singing that in a song that's like, yeah, that's cool. But there's something about looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I am a daughter of the Most High King. That will change the precedent of your entire day. And just speaking that out loud anytime during the day that you're starting to feel anxious, just saying anxious or insecure about who you are and your value and your worth. And so for the fixer, you know, I would say that anytime you're starting to feel anxious and you're starting to feel like you need to fix things, you're starting to feel like you're something in your extended family, like you want to fix this relationship that's going on, or something at you know, in your community, or something in the world that, you know, you see that's falling apart and you just want to fix it, or your child is making a choice and you know they need to figure it out for themselves, but you just want to fix it. You know, I would just recommend saying out loud, like, I serve a God who will always win in the end. And just saying that out loud until you believe it. Just continue to say it. I think one of the misconceptions that we have, and just in Christian culture in general, is that believing in God or choosing to learn about God will result in this overnight confidence in all that he is capable of, and this exceptional ability to surrender in all that he is, to all that he is, rather, excuse me. And that's not always true. Sometimes we have a hard time just believing in what God can do and surrendering to who he is. You know, I wrote a song called One of a Kind, and there's a lyric in there that says, I know that Jesus loves me, but it's sometimes hard to see. And that was hard to say because I don't know what you'll think of me. And my daughter is, interestingly enough, she's obsessed with that video now. So she watches it like 1,000 times a day. And every single time that line happens, I just pray that she's soaking it in. And I just pray that she understands that it's okay to have those moments where you say, God, I know that you can fix it, but I still want to, you know? Because we think that we have to be like, okay, God's going to fix it. I'm going to be okay. I found quiet, happy times. You know, it's not always like that. Sometimes choosing to surrender and choosing to let go is crying in your room because you can't go chase and fix and control everything. And that is still an act of surrender. And it is a practice. Surrender is a practice. And so it takes that daily prayer of just saying, God, I know that you will win in the end. I know that you will win in the end. that daily practice as we just continue to pursue the peace and the quiet that truly does come with surrender.
That's so good, Jamie. So good. Well, speaking of your daughter, let's say your daughter's going to listen to this in a few years. She gets older. She has a little, you know, bigger head on her shoulders, meaning that, you know, she's got a little bit more together. Not that she doesn't, because I've watched a couple of the videos with you all.
She is
adorable. Well, what do you want her to know about who she is and whose she is?
Yeah. You know, I just pray that she will always find her absolute confidence and strength in who God is. And just knowing that God is such an incredible creator and provider, and that she doesn't have to search for, you know, reinventing herself and almost making herself a new creation, if you will, to feel confident or to feel brand new. You know, that things like going to college and getting a degree are super cool, and wearing makeup can be super fun, and buying nice clothes can be awesome, but those things won't change the fact that she was already created by the greatest creator. And, you know, I hope that she pursues great friendships that are healthy for her, and maybe even, you know, some little hiccups here and there, and she learns from them. And I hope that if she desires to be married, that she falls in love with an awesome guy, and has super cool kids if that's what she wants to do, and becomes a foster mama if that's what she wants to do. Like, whatever God puts in her heart, but I hope that she always remembers that her value will not be found in who she does or doesn't date or marry. Her value will not be found in the amount of kids that she does or doesn't have, or the, you know, children that she does or doesn't foster or adopt, like whatever that looks like for her future. And so, I want to, of course, you know, as my mom is my greatest champion, you know, I hope that I can always be the greatest champion for my daughter. But I even hope that her being raised under the current umbrella of Jamie Grace, if you will, you know, having a mom of influence, that makes me cringe to say that I am that, but it is what it is. So I hope that she doesn't find her value and worth in that either. I hope that it is just always that look, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, no matter what kind of money you make, no matter what kind of money you don't have, no matter if you drive a Mercedes, a Honda, or if you're really into bicycles or public transportation, like, I hope that you just know that God is all that you will ever need, and he will be the absolute source of every amount of quiet, peace, joy, and significance that you'll ever look for.
Oh, I just love that. And for all the moms out there, I'm sure they're like, oh. And I think that's a prayer that we can pray for our children and express to them and remind them regardless of their age. You know, they need to hear that. They need to be reminded, because with everything that comes at them, they're always trying to prove who they are.
Mm-hmm. Right. Most definitely. I mean, I'm almost 30, and which I, side note, I cannot wait for. I've been waiting for my 30th birthday since I was about 9 years old. I'm so pumped. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, like, I texted my mom at like 2 o'clock in the morning, which I don't know if it's a mom thing or what, but she will always text me back, like, no matter what time it is. And I texted her and I was like, can you please text me that thing again about how I'm not, or I can't remember how I phrase it. I was like, can you please text me that thing again that says I'm not a failure, or that I'm not failing, or something like that. I didn't even give her a lot of details. And, like, I mean, she just spoke so much life into me and just was so encouraging. So much so that I saved the text, and I've sent it to multiple mom friends of mine, and I even made my mom post it publicly because it blessed me so much. I was like, Mom, moms everywhere need to hear this. And so, you know, like, when I was like 5, it looked like, hey, Mom, I need a cuddle. And like, now that I'm 28, it looks like, hey, Mom, I need a pep talk. And sometimes, like, I'll straight up just go to her house and be like, I'm about to sit in your lap. Like, I don't care that I'm taller than you, but, like, that's just what's about to happen. Like, just, like, vibe with it. Like, it's not weird.
It's not weird. I think it's absolutely precious. It's so important to have that relationship. Not everybody does, and I'm so excited, and you are so blessed that you have that with your mom. I want to talk about something else, though. We've kind of talked about anxiety. We've hit upon being a fixer, fixing things up all the time, even about letting go a little bit. Another one that you write about is control. And control is a big thing. But before we dive into it completely, I want you to define it, because as you describe it in your book, it's not kind of like always necessarily the control freak that we're thinking, like, what is control?
Yeah. I mean, I think it can mean a lot of different things for a lot of people. I know for me, like one of the main reasons why I've always kind of struggled with control is having Tourette syndrome. I don't have a lot of control. And so, you know, I have a tic disorder, and I literally just like don't have control over like what my arm's going to do over the next 50 years of my life or however long I have this. And so, yeah, I definitely struggle with control for a while, just wanting everything to be okay and just wanting everything to be, you know, to be nice, you know, just feeling like I have to kind of almost feeling kind of like the assistant to my family, if you will. Like I really enjoy making PDFs. And so there was a time where actually, I don't know why I just said there was a time, like this doesn't exist anymore. But when my family goes on any kind of like vacation or something like that, like I will straight up make like a full PDF, and I'll be like, hey guys, like this is what we should do on this day. This is what we should do on that day. Like, and they fully embrace it because we all think it's hilarious at this point, even though I'm dead serious. And if they don't do my plans, I'm a little bit hurt, but whatever. But I even had to like surrender a lot of that and just understanding like, look, whether it's like, and having a child, my word, has helped me so much in understanding things don't always go as planned. Cause I bought like a little toilet, cause I was like, we're going to potty train. And then she was like, no, we're not. And I was like, oh, my mistake. This was $30. You could have told me that before I pressed add to cart on Amazon, but you don't speak English. You know, I really had to learn a lot about surrendering control. We think of control as such a negative thing, as such like, oh, this person is so obsessive and they're trying to run everything. But so often as the person that is, and this doesn't make it right or wrong, but so often as a person that is controlling, if you will, that's not at all what we're trying to do. We're just trying to make sure everybody's okay. And we're just trying to make sure that everybody's at peace and everybody's happy. And again, that doesn't make it right or wrong. But a lot of times that's just the kind of, I don't know, that's just kind of the concept that, like the misconception, I think, that we have of control. And so what I've just chosen to do is just say, okay, well then I have this like need or desire to control things. So how can I make this beneficial? Like, I think a lot of times we're like, okay, I have this characteristic that's not positive. Let me delete it. Like, no, don't delete it. Just repurpose it. And so that's kind of what I've done. And I'm like, you know what? I see pain around me. How can I choose to be patient? And how can I, you know, and that is a form of control. It's self-control. And it's choosing to say, okay, I am seeing a lot of hatred. So I choose love. That's a form of control. It's self-control. And it's choosing to make the choices better, the appropriate choices for very inconvenient circumstances.
So good. So good, Jamie. Well, okay. So we've jumped to a lot of different ones, but I want to throw one more in, as I know we're coming close to ending our time together. We can't leave out comparison. Especially for women.
We can. Bye. I'm just kidding.
We can't, but, well, no. But, I mean, think about it. You're in the industry. Holy cow. I mean, yeah. That's just the beginning. We've got social media. We've got texting. We've got Snapchat. I mean, you name it. There's so much out there. How do you begin to really handle comparison? Where do you draw the line? What does it look like for you, and how does it operate in your family?
Yeah. Again, I have to just first acknowledge the privilege that I do speak from, because so again, my sister, I joked and said that she's my claim to fame. But she also says the same thing about me if she's speaking in music circles. And so, my sister is super famous, and I don't say numbers to be, inappropriate or anything, but I just want to provide context. And so she has 1.5 million Instagram followers, and she grew that by asking people to share their stories, and then writes poetry based off of it. She has literally partnered with people like Coach, with her words. Like, she is the coolest human on the, besides Reba McEntire, my sister is the coolest human on the planet. And Mahalia Jackson would be there too, but she's in heaven now. So my sister made it to number two. That's actually really sad. So I'll put Morgan back at number three, just for honor. But anyways, so a lot of people like want to compare us, like, you know, because my sister's a singer as well. So we'll play concerts together, you know, before COVID, and we did things for fun. And my sister, like, people will literally come up to like my autograph line and be like, "Hey, don't tell your sister, but I like you better." And I'm like, I don't care. Like, that's so weird. Why would you tell me that? Like, I like her better. So what is wrong? Like, what's the problem? Or people would like go up to like, or people would come up to me and be like, "Hey, I'm so sorry, but I don't want your autograph. I just want to talk to your sister." And I'm like, why are you apologizing to me for that? I love my big sister, and I love that you want to talk to her. And if you just walked up to me just so that you can walk past me to get to her, that's okay with me. Like, I don't exist to receive glory and honor, you know, so I'm okay with that. And again, the reason why I say that I speak from a place of privilege in that is because the way we were raised was not, "Oh, you drew a picture, let me put it up on the refrigerator." The way we were raised was, "You know, I don't think drawing's one of your strengths, but I love it when you sing." We were raised with a very honest culture in that if we were practicing a song to sing at church, and like we were raised to understand, like, "Hey, don't pick the solo because you want it. Pick the person that needs the solo because it makes the most sense for their voice. And make sure that everybody has a time to shine. And don't play guitar just because you want to play guitar. If you're not ready to play those chords yet, but your sister is, then let her have the moment to play those chords. And you do something else that you're great at. Because everybody has gifts, everybody has talents." I didn't know that other people weren't raised like that. So for Morgan and I to now, like we went through a season where I was quote unquote more famous than she was. And her husband was on tour with me doing my merch. So she was just like hanging out backstage, and people were like, "Oh, aren't you jealous because you're not on stage?" And my sister was like, "No, because I still get to eat the food. Like, what's wrong with, like, why are y'all talking to us? Like, why are people comparing us to each other?" And so we just didn't get that. It wasn't until I really got in the industry and I was having a hard time making friends with some of the women in the industry. And I don't like to like call names, of course, but I do want to make sure that I acknowledge that there are some phenomenal women in the industry. This is not a 100% statement at all. There are some wonderful women out there, and I don't want to sound like this is a 100%, but I was having a hard time making friends. And I remember there was one girl that was bullying me a little bit. And so we ended up doing an event together, and I sat with her backstage, and I just said to her, like, "Hey, you're not very nice to me. Like, can you tell me why? Like, I just don't know why. Like, I feel like we should be friends because we have the same job. Like, why wouldn't we be best friends?" And her words, she said to me that when she got signed with a record label, they sat her down with a chart and they said, "Jamie Grace is up here. You're down here. And until you get to her level, you won't be good enough." And she was not the only person that told me something very much like that. And that broke me to my core, because I realized that because of my success as an artist, not only was I being compared to other people, but I was becoming the standard in which some people, again, very keyword, a very small group of some, I don't want it to sound like all, but that some people were being compared to me saying, "You got to be good enough." And that broke my heart, because I can look at every singer in the world and tell you what they can do that I cannot do. And that's a good thing. I think we need to be able to look at each other and say, you can do this that I can't do. So how can I help to push you a little bit higher so that people can see what you're capable of? How can I help to elevate your gifts and your talent so that people can see what you're capable of? And that's what we should be doing. The Word of God talks about that. The Word of God talks about how we can't all be one part of the body of Christ. And I wish that that was a thing that Christians would actually operate in, that more Christians would operate in. A lot of Christians do operate in that, but it breaks my heart. And I think that that is one of the ways that we can find quiet in our everyday lives is when we shut down the noise of comparison, because my word, it is so loud and it is so unnecessary, and it just breaks my heart.
Mm. Good words there, Jamie. Good words. Well, since writing your book, looking back, what lesson or lessons have you learned from God that he revealed to you that you didn't see when you were going through it?
Well, I of course understand the severity in which, you know, COVID-19 has presented, and I don't at all take that lightly. With that being said, I did have a moment where I was like, uh-oh, because I wrote this whole book about slowing down and finding quiet. And then the world was like, nobody go anywhere. And I was like, is this my fault? Like, like I wrote a book about needing to find quiet. Now all my tours are canceled. I can't see any of my friends. I haven't been on an airplane. I lost all my SkyMile status. Like, what is happening? It's all my fault. So honestly, that's been a huge thing that I've learned, because so much of what I was learning and exploring about finding quiet had to do with the spiritual side of things and the emotional side of things. And it got very literal, very fast. And yeah, I miss my job. I miss touring. I miss concerts. That was such a significant way that I connected with people. Church as well. That was such, like, church and concerts for me, they don't go hand in hand, but sometimes they feel like they do because it's, you know, live music in a venue, you know, and hopefully you're being blessed and convicted and encouraged when you walk out, by the time you walk out. And so that's been something that the Lord has really taught me, is that I have to be a lot more intentional with the way that I pursue church, with the way that I pursue community, and with the way that I pursue music. I can't, like, I didn't realize what a privilege it was to just hop in my car and drive to church and also pass 15 churches on the way. Like, that's a privilege. Like, that doesn't happen in other countries. And so I didn't realize that. And so I had to, like, now I'm like not being in a physical church building, I was like, the Lord is really dealing with my heart of like, oh, you have to work for it now, Jamie. You know what I mean? Like I have to like get up and like make, like, turn on the TV and like work a little harder to stay awake. I'm just gonna be honest, I've fallen asleep on church a couple times because we'll choose to watch it like at the end of the week and we're like, okay, we'll just turn on church, and I'm like, bad idea, because I didn't hear anything Pastor Rick had to say. So that's been a huge thing that I've learned, is just like being a lot more intentional with the things that I took for granted before.
Jamie, I know people are going to want to pick up their own copy of Finding Quiet, My Journey to Peace in an Anxious World. I know people are going to want to connect with you because you love connection. And since we don't have concerts right now, we know that's going to open up eventually. And I'll be there at one of them for sure. Where can they connect with you?
Yeah. So you can connect with me on all the social media platforms. TikTok, Instagram, all those places, J-A-M-I-E, Jamie Grace. If you search for me, you'll see me there. And then also you can get, this is like a tiny little connection, but if you want a signed copy of my book, you can get a regular copy at like Amazon and all that. But if you want a signed copy, you can go to jamiegrace.com and order your signed copy. It's either signed by me or my one-year-old. I'm not telling anybody who, but it's signed by one of the two of us, so you'll see.
I think I should get both of your signatures in a book.
I'll see what I can do. Okay. I'm not sure if it'll be legible, but she signs everything else in this house. So, you know.
Why not, right? Well, before I let you go, I have one more question for you. The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
You know, not to at all, like, plug anything, if you will. But I do have an EP that comes out in November called Normal on November 9th. And I think one main thing that my story has given me is using the word, because, you know, I know that I'm different. Like, I know that I'm not like everybody else. And so for the longest time, I would just be like, I'm different. Like, I'm not normal. And lately I've just been like, wait, this is my normal. I'm awkward. I'm goofy. I don't ever match my socks to each other, because why would I waste my time doing that? Like, I don't, when I wash clothes, I don't separate the darks from the lights. I do think that cheese is an important food group. And I'm just an awkward person. Like, I'm goofy, I'm silly, but this is, you know, I'm not neurotypical, but this is my normal. And I've spent the longest time, I used to apologize for my ADHD. You know, the first, actually, ironically, the very first line of the song Normal, it says, I'm sorry for all the things I said when I forgot I was trying to be normal. And then the next line is, and I'm sorry for the lie that I was trying to be normal. And it's because I spent a long time apologizing for having ADHD, because I would get distracted in the middle of conversations and then I couldn't find my way back to where I wanted to go. So I would say sorry and I would get really embarrassed. But the last year, I actually stopped apologizing for that. And I am sorry if it causes inconvenience, but I am not sorry for the fact that I'm different. And I'm not sorry for the fact that this is my normal. I get distracted sometimes and I lose focus. And I'm a little bit more anxious than your everyday person that doesn't have a medical condition or something like that. But Jesus loves me and my family loves me and my therapist takes way too much of my money for me to be out here apologizing in these streets. So just is what it is.
Oh, I love you, Jamie Grace. You are awesome. You are a ray of sunshine. And I know you're going to bless so many people with your brand new book. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.